On this episode of The Playbook, I have one of the most inspirational stories I've ever had about Jeff Griffin, who himself is a transformational speaker and author. He wrote a book called I'm Possible, but what Jeff has represented in this podcast is the human nature and inspiration of what we can do by defying all expectations and limitations of what others want for us. Join me for all of this and more on The Playbook. This is Entrepreneurs The Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success and what made them champions on the field and in the boardroom. I'm your host and CEO of Sports One Marketing, David Meltzer. This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs The Playbook, and I'm so excited because I have Jeff Griffin, entrepreneur, author, and CEO of Griffin Motivation, and that's at griffinmotivation.com. Most of his friends call him Griff, and I'm going to take the liberty of calling him Griff during the interview because since the day that I met you, I felt as if we were soulmates, not just friends, that we had lived past lives together. Our journeys, although very different, I think the inspiration behind our journeys are very similar. And Jeff, you're sitting there. Some people may be able to tell, obviously in audio they can't. You're in a wheelchair.
Yes.
And that wheelchair, you know, could be an albatross. It could be an anchor. It seems to me as I get to know you, it's really your wings. And it had that wheelchair you've allowed to lift you to levels that most people didn't think were possible. In fact, you wrote a book called Impossible.
Yeah, in fact, it's called I'm Possible, right?
A lot of even people, better, right? Yeah,
yeah,
good,
even
thank
better,
you.
Absolutely. Yeah. A lot of people like see that. They're like, hey, he's the author of Impossible. I'm like, close, I'm Possible, absolutely.
And I love making mistakes because then it really reiterates how important it is, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm Possible, and you know, I am is one of the biggest things in my life. Yes. Let's get a little bit, you know, into your background, though. Mm-hmm. You know, I want to ask you, how did you end up in a wheelchair?
Absolutely, that's a great question. And first of all, Dave, I just want to reiterate what you just said to me, right? It really does feel like we've been friends forever. And perhaps maybe we played football.
Yeah, I hope so.
In a past life.
On the same team, I hope.
There you go, right? And I don't know, were you the quarterback, running back?
I was running back.
Running back, yeah, perfect. As long as they didn't go to you all the time.
No, exactly. We'd now you got Andre Reed in you. Yeah. You always wanted the ball.
I'm like, I'm open. With three guys around me, I'm open.
Great attitude to have.
Throw me the ball. Absolutely. So I wasn't always in a wheelchair.
Okay.
I wasn't always in a wheelchair, but I can honestly say, Dave, that I'm grateful to be in a wheelchair. Dissatisfied, but grateful.
Great distinction.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a huge distinction. And so I'm grateful. It's taken me everywhere. It really has. It's taken me around the world. When I was a little kid, I wanted to play on the big stage. I wanted to play football in college. And everyone just told me, like, Griff, you can't play football in college. You're too short. You're too slow. You're too white. And I'm like, okay, I get that. I'm short. I'm slow. And I'm white. But I can work on two out of the three.
Right.
Right? And so I just had this dream. And that was my passion. I love playing football. And so when people find out that I'm in a wheelchair and I love playing football, like, they have wheelchair football.
Right.
I'm like, that wasn't always in a wheelchair.
I thought, oh, he was paralyzed playing football.
Yeah.
Right? I thought, oh, he got hit and was paralyzed playing football, but that's really not happened. Did you ever get to play college football?
You know, I did. I did, actually. In fact, you know, I chased down my dream and continued to do what I could do. And I always tell my audiences, I'm like, there's one or two things you can focus on. You can focus on what you can do or you can focus on what you can't do. And I could focus on that I was too short, or I was too slow, or I was too white, or all these other reasons, right? As human beings, we base other people's possibilities on our limitations, generally speaking.
Yeah.
And most of us reject what we don't understand, and we base our possibilities on what we know. And so there's the paradox. And so I just continued to chase down my dream. And then one day my senior year, I went inside, and there's a letter from the legendary Hall of Fame coach Lavelle Edwards, inviting me, the short, slow, white guy, to his school. Now
to play football.
To play football.
Yeah.
And somebody called me out on one time, like, hey, everyone at BYU is short, slow, and white.
I love that.
And I'm like, hey, they still have a national championship.
Steve Young won't like that, yeah, but I love that.
Absolutely. And the reason why I wanted to go to BYU is because of people like Steve Young. I wanted to play for the next All-American quarterback and make catch after catch after catch.
I would have loved to play for Jim McMahon. Now, we represented at least Steve Young, and he's an extraordinary human being. Mm-hmm. And a great announcer and in person and philanthropist, but I know it's probably not even politically correct to say this. I love Jim McMahon. I thought if I could just play for a guy like Jim McMahon, even me, I'd go to BYU.
You'd go to BYU.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely. Somebody eat hot dogs on the sideline.
Exactly. But just a winner, man.
Yeah.
Like, he is not a quitter. That guy loved to win, and he was a leader. And you have interesting philosophy about leadership that you taught me. Mm-hmm. You know, the difference between two types of leader and success. Mm-hmm. Can you share with me kind of your philosophy between, you know, a leader and the leader of success of sorts?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I tell people all the time that if they want to be a successful leader and a leader of success, right, which are two different things. A successful leader and a leader of success. If we want to be a successful leader and a leader of success, we've got to develop a burning desire, a true desire, a definite desire, right? And desire is one of the three Ds that people need to understand in order to have success. In fact, you and I talked about that success is, to, at least in my opinion, there's a three step, you know, there's success is a three-part series. And, you know, the first part is you got to know what you want. And number two, you got to finish what you start. And number three, you got to celebrate the process.
That's awesome.
From the beginning to the end. And so, you know, leaders of success and successful leaders, so many times when you ask people, what's the opposite of failure? I mean, what's the opposite of success?
It's failure.
I think I just gave the answer.
Yeah.
I just led the people.
But this was a real, I heard you say that and I'm like, that is so stupid, right? Explain why that's so stupid. The opposite of success, everybody would immediately say failure.
Failure, absolutely, right? So, you know, what's the opposite of success? You might have said failure, right? And maybe I led you down that path. But I'm telling you right now that 99% of the people will say the opposite of success is failure. But I've never met anybody who has been successful who has not failed.
Well, there can't be opposites then.
Right.
Yeah, I'm a math guy.
Right.
Doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense, right? And so you're like, no. Fail, you know, fail with glory and be okay with it. But at the same time, don't hang your excuses on this new philosophy either, because I'm going to be flying home in an hour and I don't want my pilot to fail.
Me neither.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't want my surgeon to fail either. And so, but failures at first are triumphs at last, as long as you just don't quit. And so for me, the opposite of success is to quit.
And you quit football, actually.
I know, I did, right?
I heard that today, and I'm like, wait a second. My man quit football?
Yeah.
So you made it to BYU, and you're on the team. Yeah. Why would you quit?
Right? You're why do you get to the point where you want to be, and then you just hang it up, and you're like, you walk away from it? And the beauty of it is, too, I also want to let your listeners understand as well that I took a two-year break, and I discovered what I call the P-squared mindset.
Yes.
The P-squared mindset, which helps you develop your dream and match it up with your desire, right? It's crucial part of a P-squared mindset. Another part is to give yourself permission to fail, like we talked about before. Another one is to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because it's in the discomfort, it's in the struggle that we find the strength, and that's when we're stretched, and that's when we grow. You're working out, right?
Yeah.
And you're starting to grow. You've been stretched and everything, and you're like, man, this doesn't make sense. But there's the paradox as well. And so another part of the P-squared mindset is this idea of, I'm going to focus on the process and not the promise, because it's the process that helps us progress, not the promise. But so often we focus on the promise and we abort the process. And so, and then the last one, which is my favorite part of the P-squared mindset, is hope. You got to have hope. And the beauty of this is, for me, the definition of hope is the ability to reach out to the future and grab onto your dreams and bring it back to the present in spite of your past.
It seems like to me, as you articulate very strong philosophies that are in the I'm Possible book, that like me, we were unconscious about these philosophies when we were playing football. Mm-hmm. A lot of the things that you're explaining, I know to make it to BYU, and you, although you quit, you actually got to play, mm-hmm. which was your dream. You mm-hmm. got two plays. You were Rudy.
Yeah.
You told me you're
the Rudy of BYU.
You were the Rudy of BYU, but you even had your two roommates cheering Rudy when you were playing. And to you, you know, it was the ultimate, you know, experience. But moreover, you know, we're going to get to the fact that you're in a wheelchair, but yeah, you played football at BYU. You weren't paralyzed playing football.
No.
But these philosophies were ingrained. They were part of your quantum memory almost. They to make it to BYU, being slow, white, and not that good.
Yeah.
But to make it that far is an extraordinary accomplishment. It's pursuing your potential. You know, how is it that these types of philosophies, feelings, inspirations lie dormant until something happens? And I'm going to allow you to kind of share with us what happened. How'd you end up from the fields of BYU into a wheelchair?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what was interesting, right, it was because I share this experience that I did quit. And you brought it up as well, because I go out and I tell people, don't quit. The opposite of success is to not quit.
Right.
And here I am.
But it's not in your personality. That, like, even to make it to BYU, if you were a quitter, you would have never been able to get that letter from Lavelle Edwards.
Yeah.
Like, quitters don't get those.
And the steps I took to even get recognized, right? I'm like, I had this conscious decision. I'm going to go to their camp. I'm going to do some other things to be recognized. And so I was doing some things that I needed to do to be recognized and have that success. But at the same time, I still didn't understand the demons that rear their heads, the demons of doubt, the demons of fear, the demons of complacency, right? And the demons of just this pushback. Whenever we go do something new, there's going to be pushback, and I wasn't prepared for the pushback. You know, I made it to my dream. I made it to campus, and I wasn't prepared for the pushback. My dreams were challenged. My desire was tested, and I just wasn't prepared. And so what was interesting is after I quit, you know, I took a 2-year break, and I went and served an LDS mission in Spain, and I learned a lot of these tools along the P-squared mindset that I was talking about on those 2 years. It took me 2 years to really grasp it and understand it. Hopefully it will take your listeners just minutes, if not seconds, to get it, because you can. But what was interesting is once I fell 40 feet, I was up on some scaffolding, and I fell 40 feet in between seasons. I came back, I played a season, and I did get in, and I played two downs. And so I got to taste the sweetness of success. I got to see what it was like to be on the first team, to hold hands and to be on the field and to smell and take it in, and that fresh cut grass and the sweat from your equipment and everything. It's just amazing, right? And the sun coming down, the crowds up in the stands, it was just magical. And as leaders, what we're trying to do is trying to get people to play this game called life, not just to get them to the stadium, not just to get them on the sideline, but to get them onto the playing field of life. I think that's what a real leader is to get them to play this game of life. And so as I fell 40 feet and I broke my back, I had a decision to make. I could quit again, or I could get back up and dream new dreams. And so I believe that experience that happened a few years prior to me falling 40 feet really gave me was the catalyst to help me get through this experience. Because I'm telling you, 40 feet, my dreams of playing football, done in an instant.
Well, your dreams of almost everything ended in an instant. In fact, if you can grab your book real quick,
please,
I was
absolutely
hoping, read to me, because I know you don't have it memorized, what the doctor told you when you first got out of, you're in the hospital and you just basically are conscious, I guess, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd love to read that to you. By the way, if I can explain to your
please,
listeners, I got a D- in sixth grade in English, right?
You're like Gary Vee, man. He always brags about failing. Yeah. He's got six bestsellers.
I know, I'm telling you. So I got a D- in sixth grade. In high school, my English teacher told me I'd never write a comprehensive sentence. When I got to college, all that was validated. My freshman English class, when I went there the first day, I wrote down that paragraph. The next day, they called six of us out of 300. And I'm one of the six. I go bounding back there. I'm like, hey, what'd I win? And they're like, you want a date with the remedial English teacher. I'm like, what does that mean? That's why you need it. And I'm like, okay. So this book right here, I think, is one of my greatest accomplishments. I just finished my second book called Endless Possibilities, 90-Day Recipe for World Record Results.
Wow.
And
then get that right at griffinmotivation.com, right?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, if you guys want a copy, I'm going to give you a little love. griffinmotivation.com /shop. If you put the keyword love, we'll knock off 50% on our books and any
it's
other
an
products.
Awesome book, by the way. I don't allow even the most famous authors on this podcast to promote their book, but you're you're McGriff, man. Like, I'm going out of bounds. I really want people to buy this book.
Yeah.
I want people to read this book because it encompasses what I think the universe needs, mm-hmm. is the idea of possibility to probability to perspective, the idea of what you're about to read to people, mm-hmm. and where you have come and gone from what was literally impossible. So go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely.
What did the doctor
man.
Tell you when
absolutely.
You when you fell 40 feet and shattered yourself?
Absolutely. So this is page 64. It says, the doctor came in with the results. The look on his face said it all. Jeff, he began, your L1 vertebrae has been shattered. He continued as a professional should. It exploded from the force of the fall, damaging your spinal cord. Without letting any of us respond, he finished with the diagnosis. Your T12 vertebrae is compressed as well. The silence in the room was palpable. The hum of the air vent was drowning out the noise in my head. You could almost hear everybody's heart beating out of their chest. Each word from the doctor was like a blow from a heavyweight boxer. The knockout punch came next. You're paralyzed from the waist down. The room began to circle. I almost didn't hear what came next. You'll neither walk nor move your legs again. We've scheduled a time for your surgery to repair your spine the best we can. The lights were going out and the doctor was almost finished. Do you have any questions you would like me to answer? We sat there in silence, not knowing what else to say or do. If you need anything, the doctor continued sympathetically, let me know. I'll do the best I can to help you. We said nothing. It felt like the wind had been knocked out of us. The silence was deafening as he looked at us with our mouths half open. With nothing more to say, the doctor turned and left as fast as he entered. The news was direct and clear. Your back is broken. You are paralyzed from the waist down. You will never use or move your legs again. Those statements were crystal clear and to the point. I couldn't misinterpret those comments. It was obvious at that moment my dream of playing football at BYU was over.
0% chance of ever
0% chance.
Now, that's for a guy like you who was dreaming. What was your initial reaction to that?
Yeah, it was huge. 0% chance. You're not going to walk again. And here's something I've learned. Like, there's a buzzword out there called resilience. You know, we need resilience. There's a man called Christian Moore who's identified four sources of resilience: relational resilience, street resilience, resource resilience, and rock bottom resilience. And one of the sources called street resilience is you take pain, you take disrespect, you take inequality, and you tap into it and you use it as motivation. And so that's why a lot of these athletes try to find something to tap into, right? Like Jeter and the Yankees, they won 125 games that year, and they also won the World Series. And like, oh, we had to prove to the doubters. I'm like, who's going to
doubt? Exactly.
Yeah, right? Who's doubting, right? But that's something they tapped into, is this, the disrespect. Tell me that I can't, and I'll show you that I can.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, what's ironic, is I really didn't have that developed at that time when I first went to school. But I was able to build up that P squared mindset to where, you know what, now that I've just fallen 40 feet, my dreams of playing football are over and I can't walk and I've been told I'll never walk again, but guess what? I'm going to walk again.
Yeah.
And so I've taken that mindset, that P squared mindset, and I've listened to the song that sings in my soul, and I'm determined to walk again.
And it was awesome because you have these three D's that are dream, desire, which a lot of people have. Mm-hmm. I see it a lot. It's like entrepreneurs. I always say there's a million great ideas out there.
Yeah.
You got a big dream, dude.
Yeah.
I believe you have the desire.
Yeah.
But that third D is the 1% of the 1%.
Yeah.
The third D is what allows you to be you. And that third D is?
Do.
Do. And yeah. I say do it now.
Yeah, do it now. Don't,
exactly.
Absolutely.
I'm a do it now guy.
Yeah. And Vince Lombardi, I love the Super Bowl trophy is named after this guy.
Right.
The Lombardi Trophy, right? The winner of winners gets to keep this. And he was an amazing coach. I loved his book. I think his son's book, you know, How to Become Number One. But he said in that book that man cannot dream himself into character. He must hammer and forge one for himself. You know, we can dream and we can desire all we want, but if we don't do anything about it, then nothing's going to happen.
Which leads me to a question you probably haven't been asked, but you have four children.
I do.
Said you would never have children.
Absolutely.
Your beautiful wife.
Yeah.
I hesitate to say maybe she's blind and deaf, but after being your friend.
Yeah, I know.
No, nothing personal. I use that joke
about
myself.
That's always the question. Like, once you see her, though, it's like, dude, how did you get her?
Exactly. Right? But I've seen her picture. I'm like, oh, okay, dude. No kidding. But realistically, because my fears are always about my children. People ask you, you know, you teach about overcoming fear or how to deal with fear or motivate it, whatever it is. Anything happening to my children, right, is something that I'm still processing.
Uh-huh.
If one of your children should fall 40 feet, I'm getting choked up and lying in bed, cancel. What would be your advice as they're lying there and the doctor says you will never walk again?
That's a tough question. Because first of all, I was given a 0% chance of ever walking or standing again. Some people, the doctors gave me a 0% chance of having kids because they're like, that's the first function that goes and it's the last function to come back. Some people gave me a 0% chance of getting married. Right. Not because of my wheelchair, but just because of who I am.
You got the same personality. Right. As me.
Absolutely. I'm like, but here's the beauty of it.
Kryptonite to women.
If I can get married to a woman like that, there's no excuses. Anyone
you can do anything.
Anyone
exactly.
can.
Exactly. You're the poster child.
And so she gave me four beautiful kids, and my fear at the beginning was, okay, she's pregnant. Okay, that's the miracle in itself. And I'm like, is he going to come out in a wheelchair?
Hmm.
And I knew that wasn't even possible. But I'm like, is he going to come out in a wheelchair? Is he going to be disabled? Is he going to be crippled or what? But that question right there, what would I tell my kids?
Her kid, one child.
If I get the phone call and say they're paralyzed. And this is, and it would be the same thing I tell thousands of people when I get on stage around the world. When I was in Sweden, the Eighth World Congress on mind training and excellence.
Yeah, you thought it was same a long ish. Shot to write a book.
Right.
You're on stage with Nobel Peace Prize
yeah,
winners.
Yeah, right.
And scientists
out there over there in Sweden. And,
yeah.
And it's the same message, Dave, and this is the message. You can focus on what you can do or you can focus on what you can't do.
That simple.
You may not be able to walk. You may not be able to do this. You may not be able to do that. But guess what? There's some other things that you can do. So you can focus on what you can't do or you can focus on what you can do. And it's just that simple.
What do you think lies between, you know, one of the gifts I truly believe that I have is I simplify things for people. I tell them, man, you get to do it or you got to do it,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
You try me or why me,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you're like living proof of someone that's try me or why. You could have sat there and said, why me?
Yeah.
You said from day one, man, try me.
Yeah.
Try me. You're telling me I'm never going to walk? Try me. You're telling me I can't walk out of here? Try me. Mm-hmm. And even though you didn't walk out of the hospital, you're still saying try me. And I've watched and, you know, because I can spoil the surprise. You literally walked across my conference room with no assistance at all after someone. You stood up. You walked across my conference room with no help.
Yeah.
Wasn't pretty.
No.
You stumble and walk. Absolutely. Funny.
I call it walking with swagger.
Swagger.
Yes.
I thought about videotaping and posting as a new dance.
Yeah.
But
absolutely.
You did it. And like, here you are. And the only advice we can give people is, hey, you got to focus in on what you can do, not what you can't do. You got to focus in on you get to do, not you got to do. You got to focus in on, right, try me, not why me.
Yeah.
Here's the question. What's the secret of actually doing it? We all know these simple lessons, mm-hmm. bro. You and I both know. And as much as we talk about I can't do and I can do, I get to do, I got to do, and I, mm-hmm. you know, try me, why me, mm-hmm. I can tell everyone out there, I still don't do it all the time.
Right.
I say why me, right? I got to do this. I can't comes out once in a while still.
Yeah.
What is the secret sauce that makes us able to actually implement the simplest things like I can do it?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, what I'm hearing you say is, okay, I know what to do. So why don't I do what I know? Right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the question? I know what to do, but why don't I do what I
like,
know?
Be kind. I know to be kind.
Right.
Why aren't I always kind?
Absolutely. You click, you close the door on your car, and all of a sudden you turn into somebody else.
Yeah.
You're like, yeah, number one to you too.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I get home, you're like, ah, I got to be good. I got to be, I get that. Absolutely. And what's interesting is you spoke in San Diego when this mastermind was together. And I get a phone call saying, hey, Griff, come join this mastermind. Come join this group. We're going to go train with Navy SEALs. I'm like, you do realize I'm in a wheelchair, right? And like, yeah, we do. Absolutely. And I'm like, okay, I will sign up as long as you don't change anything.
For you?
For me.
No customization.
If I can't do it, I can't do it. But I'm going to try everything I can. But one thing I do want to do, make sure is if I come, I'm jumping out of the helicopters. I'm jumping out of the helicopter.
Into the water.
Yeah. Absolutely, man.
Ice cold water.
Yeah. And so we showed up there, but it was interesting. You were there too, and you spoke, and that was the first time that I was introduced to you and all your greatness that you've done. And this is what the Navy SEALs taught me. They're like, Griff, it's simple. It's just not easy. And so, you know, you've got to break it down to the simplicity, and you do that really well. You just break it down. But then again, okay, I know what to do, so why don't I do what I know? And it's because we haven't created those habits that help us get through that.
Connecting the dots,
absolutely. In fact, you know, Dan Clark once said that 90% of what we do is habitual. I think that number's low. I think it's even higher than that.
I believe there's a quantum memory that dictates why it's so much higher, that we're actually genetically geared to have a performance habit.
Yeah, and if we can, if we've been programmed once, why can't we be reprogrammed or programmed again?
Yeah.
Right? And so little teeny things. And so what helps me a little bit to be more consistent, I always call it consistently consistent.
I love that.
I call it 252. So 252 is like there's five building blocks that help you build this arch that stands forever. The Romans knew it. And what's the last piece that keeps the arch up? It's called the keystone. And so that keystone, they put that keystone in the arch that sits it up there. And then there's arches that have been lasting for thousands of years, right? And so if you focus, we only have 24 hours in a day. And everyone's like, oh man, I don't have enough time. I can't do this, can't do that. I'm like, well, you focus on the keystone in four areas of your life, right? So that's why I call it 252, two on this side, two on that side, and the five building blocks that will help you build that arch. And if you focus on the keystones, everything just falls into place or falls out of place. And one of those five building blocks is to be consistently consistent. Another one is to start a habit, a routine today. I call them holy habits and righteous routines. And then another one is to desire the fundamentals. That's three out of the five. But one of the things that helps me be consistently consistent is to focus on those keystone. And I also have my battle cry bracelet. You got one on there too. Absolutely. Right. By the way,
my favorite.
You can get, I've got four of them now. One's black, and it is courage do, faith have. And then there's a white one that says endless possibilities. It's E to the infinite P. And then there's the pink one that's going to be I'm possible, which you got right there.
That's right.
And then the blue one is just don't quit, capital D-O, capital I-T, you know, to do it. Because we all need a reminder. We all need a reminder, right? We're like, you know, I want to be great. I want to succeed. I want whatever our dream is. But sometimes we fall back into past patterns or bad behavior, if you want to say it that way, right? And so we just all need a reminder to adjust our attitude, right? It's like, how do you tell somebody who's overweight to lose weight? How do you tell somebody to be happy when they're depressed?
Right.
And so it's just all a matter of how can I create a routine and a habit that will sustain me through the divide of knowing what to do and doing what I know.
One of the interesting things that we talked about was preparation, and you have this great saying, I'm gonna screw it up, so go give me the saying about it when it comes time to perform, you've lost the time to
absolutely. So when the moment to perform has arrived, the moment for preparation has passed.
And speaking of that moment, right, being present, understanding that preparation, it really equates back to me about time. And as a last question, I really want to delve into your knowledge about perspective and time, because you lie there in a bed. Well, first, as a little boy, you looked at something, a dream about playing at BYU, mm-hmm. and it didn't bother you that you were 18 years away from being there.
Yeah.
You know, you carried a football with you years after years, and people would ask you why you carried the football, and you told them, because I'm going to play football at BYU. And then I always say they chuckle, laugh, and smirk at you before they applaud you.
Yeah.
And then after that dream happened, for carelessness and shortcuts, you fell off scaffolding from a business that you had built to buy a motorcycle so you could get girls and then play at BYU and pay for school. Your last job, you end up falling 40 feet, and now you're told 0% chance of ever walking. We are 20 years later.
Yes.
You can walk probably 25 feet, maybe 50 feet. I don't know. It's a hobble
a swagger.
Swagger,
yeah,
sorry.
Absolutely.
But your perspective of times like mine, you sat in front of a group of people, you speak around the world, you write books, you inspire people with all types of things about, someday I'm going to walk even carry my kids on my back and grandkids on my back and walk my daughter down the aisle, all of these great things. And I believe it to be true, where I bet you 20 years ago, if you would have told me, Dave, I'm going to do that, I would have told you, not a chance, Griff.
Yeah.
I'm your boy.
Yeah.
Just manage your expectations.
Absolutely.
Let's look and find the light in what you can do.
Absolutely.
You're not going to walk down that aisle. You know, I would, as a coach, as a possibility, probability, I would say, hey, let me manage your expectations. But I know time differently now. Mm-hmm. What is your perspective of time as you look and see what possibilities and possibilities that you have in your life? Where and how do you define time that it doesn't create resistance and impatience and frustration and voids and shortages like most people?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I've been there, right? I've been discouraged. It's not fast enough. But what's interesting is the past doesn't exist. It's in the past.
Say that again for everybody right in the camera, because that's something I live by.
Okay, so in the past, it doesn't exist. In the future, your future doesn't exist. The only thing that exists is the present. But here's the beauty of it. We can turn and look back to our past and learn from it. And we can turn and look towards our future and prepare for it. But the only thing that exists is the now. So we can learn from the past, prepare for the future, but experience the now. And as soon as I go one way or the other, things get out of whack. And so when I say, you know, you can focus on what you can or you focus on what you can't, what I can do is I can wake up in the morning, and every night I go to bed, I have my affirmation statements, I have these other things. I'm like, I tell myself, I am going to walk and not faint. I will run and not be weary. I will have a full recovery in a reasonable amount of time. And tomorrow's the day. And when I wake up, I'm like, yeah, I'm like, ah, man. I'm like, I could be discouraged. I could be shaking my fist. In fact, one of the, I call them mile markers, because I wrote the book and I'm like, I got to have a title for it. You know, I just didn't know what to do. But I went to Kathmandu, Nepal to present a peer-to-peer leadership training that I was going to do. And I flew in there. I saw Mount Everest outside the window. And Mount Everest was once deemed impossible to climb.
Yeah.
But my buddy, Jeff Glassbender, just summited it in 2017, the first male American amputee to do it. He taught Dwayne Rock Johnson his part in Skyscraper, because my buddy is an amputee, right? So anyone with the correct desire and the equipment and the right guide is going to get there. The 4-minute mile was deemed impossible. And now what just happened with the marathon?
Yeah, 2 hours busted, right?
Yeah.
For the Kenyan kid.
Sub 2 hours. Now everyone's like, you're not a marathoner unless you can go under two hours.
Yeah. And so that's like sprinting for 2 hours, by the way.
Right? I'm like, who can do that?
Yeah.
And so just this idea of just focusing in the, just focus in the presence, just focus in the presence. And so and really that's what it is if you really want to climb your Everest, you want to conquer your dreams, you know, you can prepare for them in the future and you can learn from your past, but you really got to focus on the present, because, you know, I've been in a chair longer than I have out of a chair. Now, if I were just to start living life once I start walking, I'd still not be living life.
Right.
But every day I'm like, what can I do today? What can I do today that I wasn't able to do yesterday? What can I continue to do today that builds off of yesterday? But what can I do today? And I look back and I've probably done more things in a wheelchair than most men.
Outside of one. I agree. I know I told you that was the last question, but I have to ask this, and it stems from very common question people ask me, because I talk about going back to center.
Yeah.
Right. My philosophy is stop, drop, and roll. You tried it when you were falling 40 feet. Mm-hmm. I believe that when we're in ego-based consciousness, our mind, body, and soul are on fire.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a philosophy of getting back to center. Mm-hmm. I stop, I drop everything down to center, and I roll in the trajectory that I want to be in towards the goal that I have. Trying not to waste too much time in anger, fear, frustration, anxiety, the need to be right, offended, separate, inferior, superior, all the ego-based emotions. You're an expert at going back to center. You have the ability every day to look in that mirror, and the first thought that you have is, oh, shit, I haven't come at the right place at the perfect time yet, right?
Yeah.
And I wake up in the morning pinching myself.
Yeah.
Right. I just have to be honest. Not if any like nani. Like yeah. I'm looking at you going, yeah, I may not be as good looking as Griff, but I got my own four kids and my own beautiful wife.
That's right.
And I wake up and I'm like, I feel better and better every day. Like I'm the luckiest. I'm like a Jewish leprechaun. Like I don't know what I did. Right.
Yeah.
But I can see like what I put myself in your position. To go back to center, I wake up and be like, all right, I got a long chore to be able to walk my daughter down the aisle or to run without it being weary or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I got shit to deal with inside me.
Yeah.
But externally, I'm pretty damn lucky.
You are.
How do you go back to center so quickly? Because I know you must face, because I face demons every day and I got a lot of shit going my direction physically. You have a physical manifestation that you have to look at every day. Mm-hmm. How do you go back to center?
Yeah, and I think that's what I was getting at too, to allude in that is one of the mile markers, and that's why I call them mile markers, is because to get to the top of your Mount Everest is you just can't get to the top. Inch by inch is a cinch, but yard by yard is hard, and you just can't go from the bottom to the top. So many people want to go to the top from the bottom without taking those steps. And one of the mile markers in here is called exiting the sauna of self-pity, because I entered the sauna of self-pity. I entered it. I was walling around in that syrupy, sticky, you know, sauna of self-pity. You know, just this is feeling good. Why me? Shaking my fist to God. Why did this have to happen to me? You know, prime of my life. All those things, right? And so to sit here and to say that, you know, I don't struggle. I absolutely do struggle. But what was interesting, and I'm going to end with this, but what's interesting is they stopped feeding me in the hospital in my bed. I had to get out of my bed to go get fed. And so it took me half an hour to get out of my bed. And they put my body brace on. I had to put my body brace on. And then two nurses would help me get out of it. It took me half an hour to get out of my bed. I was rolling down the sterile halls of this hospital. And I'm just crying. Just tears dripping down my cheeks. And I get to the cafeteria and I get some food on my tray. And I just want to be away from everybody. Because you know, you don't want to be around people. Just get away as far away as I can from people. So I get my tray, and I go as far away as I can in the cafeteria, put my tray down. I'm flavoring my food with my tears. All of a sudden, this tray just plops in front of me, and I'm just angry. I'm looking up. I'm going to tell this guy where to go with some colorful words,
yeah.
If you know what I'm talking about. And I look up, and he looks at me. We glance at each other. He looks at me. He's like, and he asked me a question that changed my life forever. He's like, why are you crying, dude? I'm like, what? You know, why are you crying, dude? And in his slurred speech, I understood that he was asking me, why are you crying? That question right there snapped me out of it. I looked around and I'm like, what's going on here? And I see a guy over there. He's paralyzed from the neck down. He has a halo on his head, screwed into his skull. He can't even move his arms, and he has to be fed. And another guy right next to him, he's paralyzed from the neck down as well, but he can have some movement in his arm. He has a fork taped to his hand, and he's feeding himself. By the time he gets the fork to his mouth, most of the food is gone. This guy sitting across from me, he was lifting weights, and he had an aneurysm in his brain. He paralyzed the right side of his body, and he slurred his speech, and he asked me a question that changed my life forever. He's like, why are you crying, dude? Why are you crying, dude? And you know the irony of is that guy sitting across from me was a prisoner at the point of the mountain. That prisoner set me free from my prison. And that's what gets me back to center.
Wow.
Why am I crying, dude?
I know why I'm crying. We broke every rule of the playbook. It's twice as long as it's supposed to be. It is possible that it happened. I don't promote anything. I don't have any advertisers. I don't do pre-rolls. I've lived this thing to help people, to motivate them to a playbook to success. And the reason that I broke every rule and the tears are coming out is because your message is so powerful. You are so powerful. I'm honored that you are my friend, that you came on the playbook. Not many people, I always joke when I started speaking around the world, I'm the best motivational speaker that you've never heard of. Well, you now have taken my place. And so if you don't know who Jeff Griffin is, you better find out. It's griffinmotivation.com. You got to check it out. You got to buy the book, use the code word love. I know I don't promote anything, but I'm going to promote this guy. He's incredible. And I am glad that I spent, you set a world record. This is the longest playbook we've ever done, and it's well worth it. And I hope all my listeners, viewers, everyone out there agrees with me. Let me know, share this content, comment on this content, and most importantly, be kind to your future self and do good deeds. Why Are You Crying, Dude? This is Dave Meltzer with Jeff Griffin on Entrepreneurs, The Playbook. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of The Playbook as much as me. On a personal note, I just wanted to thank everyone for making The Playbook such a success. Don't forget to continue it by sharing, subscribing, and listening to your favorite episodes. This is Dave Meltzer with The Playbook.